And we're holding on Samach Vav Amud Beis, 10 lines from, 9 lines from the bottom. The line begins Dirav Yoda. We discussed yesterday as follows. Our Mishnah had told us about the two different kinds of nechasim that a woman brings into a marriage, nechasim malug, where she owns the actual goof of them and the husband is just entitled to the payers, and nechasim tzayin barzel, where those are actually written into the ksuba, the value of them is written into the ksuba, and she actually retains ownership of that, or actually the husband has full ownership of them, but he is responsible to pay her back for their full value when the marriage is over, when he dies or divorces her. So we discussed the question. So now, if when they get divorced, she wants those actual kalim back, and he's saying that, instead of giving you the actual kalim, I'll give you their value and I'll keep the kalim. Can he do that or not? Rav Ami had said he could, and Rav Yehuda had said that not, because shvach beisaviyah, because it makes her family and herself look better when they have actual kalim, actual tangible assets in the marriage that she got from her father's house. And we said the halacha is like Rav Yehuda. So now in that connection, the Gemara tells, Hahi itza the ailel of gavra itzil of the milsa b'ksubasa. It happened that a woman, as part of her ksuba, as part of what she brought into the marriage, she brought in a piece of clothing, an itzla is like a talus or something, made of milsa of fine linen, or some of the mafarshim say silk. Whatever, it was worth a lot of money, b'ksubasa, and that was part of her ksuba. Well, what happened was, Shachiv, the husband passed away. So now at this point, the value of it is supposed to go to her, or actually, according to Rabbi Yehuda, she's entitled to the actual object itself. But Shaklua Yasmi or Parsua Amisna, the Yisraimim took that piece of clothing and spread it out over the mess, which now makes it also Bahana, because it now became part of the Tachrichim of the mess. Now, they shouldn't have done that, by the way. The Rambam mentions, based on something in Masech HaSmachas, it's actually going to be in Shloish HaParakim of Rambam in a day or two, that they had no business doing that. They should realize your Tachrichim are supposed to be cheap, and you're not supposed to waste expensive clothing like that on Tachrichim. It's just going to go rot in the grave anyway. If you really don't want it anymore, then give the value to Tzedakah or something. But anyway, the fact is they did that. So now it became Osabana. The question is, does it become Osibana? Omar Rava, Kanye Misna. So Rava says the mess now acquired it, and now the wife is not entitled, now the widow is not entitled to that piece of clothing back. All she can do, they have to give her the money, but they don't give her the actual object itself. Omale Nanai, Breidir of Yosef, Breidir Rava, Lord of Kahana. So though, Nanai, the son of Rav Yosef, the son of Rava, so this would be Rava's grandson, asked Rav Kahana, this is already the next generation, Rav Kahana is a Talmud of Rava, so Rava's grandson is asking him, Vaha Omar Rava, Omar of Nachman, Allah, Rav Yehuda. Didn't Rava say the halacha is like Rav Yehuda? So that means, in other words, that according to Rav Yehuda, the object actually belongs to her. How do the Yoshim have the ability to take it away and make it osabahana? In other words, the premise of the question was, if, for example, if you own something and I have no ownership of the object at all, and I take the thing and for example, use it as tachrichim, it won't become osabahana because it's not mine. Ain't onam osa drava shayna shaloi. So then, how do these Yoshim have the right? If according to Rava, this doesn't belong to them, then it's drava shayna shaloi, how do they have the ability to answer it? So Rav Kahana answers him, Mila murdered of Yehuda de Mechusav Guvayna. After all, even Rav Yehuda agrees that it still needs to be collected. It's still not fully in her reshus. What it means is Rav Yehuda says she has a shibud on it. Meaning, now Rav Yehuda is saying that shibud is stronger than Rav Ami is making it. Rav Ami is saying she doesn't even really have a shibud on the object itself, only on the value of it. But Rav Yehuda is saying she has a shibud on the actual object. But the fact is, it's not yet in her reshus until she actually collects it. So therefore, it is still in their reshus. So they have the ability, even the mechusu guvaina, since at that point it's still lacking collection, the reshus ekoi, then it's still in their reshus to the extent that now they're able to be, in effect, machdishit, because that's, in effect, when they make it for tachrichim, it becomes a form of hekdish. In fact, the fact that tachrichim and other things that are buried with the mess are also bahana, we actually learn it, we don't learn it from hekdish per se, we learn it by zeir shalom from egla arufa, but the point is that it becomes an isur hana similar to hekdish. So therefore, yes, they even according to Rabbi Yehuda, they do have the ability to do that because they do have a certain degree of ownership of it, and therefore even Rabbah, who's saying the halacha is like Rabbi Yehuda, is going to have to agree to that. So they have the ability to do that. And once they did that, once they made it hekdish, then it's off limits to her, and then they're only required to pay the money. So the Gemara says Rabbah l'taymei, which means that Rabbah is going according to his svara. The Amar Rabbah, which Rabbah himself says, hekdish chometz v'shichru mafkin midei shibur. We have this earlier in the Masechta, actually. We have this in connection with the discussion. We have an Eved Knani, and you go and free him by not having him tovel, by having him tovel l'shem den chorin, then he goes free. So the point is, Rava had said that these three things, hekdash chometz v'shibur, v'shichru, maskin midei shibur, all of those undo the shibur. Meaning, chometz, hekdash means, for example, what we just said, if you have an object where Reuven owns it, but Shimon has a shibur on it, for example, in this case, because it's part of Huxova, but Reuven is makdashit, and he has the ability to, because he has a certain degree of ownership of it, like they do over here, then that undoes the shibur, and that makes that now this object is not under, now it's not under a shibur anymore, now just the value of it has to be paid to the other person. Rashi stresses that we're talking about over here only when it has kedushas aguf. If it had been the kind of hekdish which is only kedushas domim, then that wouldn't be correct. Kedushas domim, in fact, does not undo a shibur, but here we're talking about kedushas aguf. So therefore, that's what it does. So that's hekdish.
Does that hold for kahka also? And real estate.
So that's what we're talking about. In other words, so real estate would be the same thing.
Even when the object is irreplaceable, because sometimes real estate is not replaceable.
Yeah. So in the case of land, what it would mean is exactly that. Land becomes, land doesn't have kedushas aguf. Land by definition can only have kedushas domim. So again, that's why Rashi is stressing we're talking about kedushas aguf. But yeah, same idea. For example, let's say, for example, Reuven lends Shimon money. And Shimon says, I'm making my cow an aposiki for this. In other words, when it comes time to collect, then my cow is mortgaged to it. If I don't pay you back, then you can take that cow. And now afterwards, Shimon goes and takes that cow and is makdish as a korban. Then yeah, we say the aposiki goes away and Reuven can't collect from that. If Shimon pays back, then good. And if not, then you have the usual ways in which he's going to be able to collect his debts in other ways, but not from that object. So that's hekdish. It would be the same thing whether it's irreplaceable or not. Chometz would be, for example, so Rashi gives the example that a goy lent a Jew money, and the Jew used his chometz as collateral for the loan. So now, when Pesach comes, then that chometz is going to be also bahana, because after all, it belongs to a yid. Rashi points out over there that we're talking about that now you do have times when it will be mutter, namely if the Jew actually placed it in the goy's house. You know, that's what it's called. We're there; it's not in the Jew's property over Pesach, so then it's not mechusar guvina. The point is, we're saying over here in our Gemara that it's mechusar guvina; it has yet to be collected. Therefore, it's still in the reshus of the Jew, and therefore it becomes osir, and therefore he can't use it. Therefore, the goy can't collect from it after Pesach. And Rashi mentioned that same point back on Daf Mem Vav and then gave basically the same answer, basically the same explanation over there that we're talking about, that he made his chometz and apusiki and it's in the Jew's possession. Anyway, the point is, so again, that undoes the shibur, the shichrur, and for example, if a slave was freed, so for example, a Jew again made his eved is going to be an apusiki to collect the debt, and then he freed him, so the freedom of the slave takes effect. And you don't have, he's going to have to collect his debt from someplace else. So mafkin, midei shibur, all of those things undo a shibur. So therefore, by the same token here, when the yoshim took this itzel de milsa, this fancy woolen coat, and used it for tachrichim. They shouldn't have done that, but nevertheless, the fact is they did that, and therefore they had the ability to do it because it was still in their reshus, even according to the Yehuda, and therefore all they do is pay back the value. Okay. The Gemara mentions another din in this connection, Amr of Yehuda. Now, what happens if she brought into the marriage two kalim, which together are worth 1,000 zuz? The shavu, over time, they've increased in value, but amru ashnei alafim. Now, the total value of the two kalim is 2,000. Now, obviously, in terms of the ksuba payment, she's only entitled to the value of 1,000. But Rabbi Yehuda says, Echad netalter b'ksubasa, one of them she gets because that's the actual payment of the amount in her ksuba for the nichsitza in Basel. But Echad, and as far as the second one, nesenes damim netlatoi, if she wants it, if she wants that second keli as well, she can give money and take it. In other words, and the Yoshim can't say, sorry, this one belongs to us and we only have to give you 1,000. If she wants, we only have to give you the one and we get to keep the other. If she wants the other as well, then fine. She doesn't get it for free because that's not the value that was put in Huxuba, but they can't prevent her from giving them the money and taking it because again, you have the factor of Shevach Beisavia that it makes her and her father's household look good when they have these expensive kalim that came from her father's house and now are coming into her next marriage. So therefore, in other words, in short, they're required to sell that second kalim to her. So the Gemara says, my kamash malon. So what's Rabbi Yehuda's chiddush with that? Shvach Beis Aviyah didahavi is the chiddush is that whenever we have Shvach Beis Aviyah, it belongs to her. Ha amr Rabbi Yehuda chodazimna. We already have the previous din where Rabbi Yehuda said that. What is he adding in this one? And the answer is, without Rabbi Yehuda telling us, Mauritema, you would have thought to say, sure, when the keli is something that is something that she gets as part of her ksuba, as in the previous case where we had for example, the keli at the time when she got married was worth 1,000, and now it's still worth 1,000, or for that matter, now it depreciated, and now it's worth less, whatever, then she's entitled to that keli. That we know from Rabbi Yehuda's first din, fine, because it's all within the amount that she's supposed to get for her ksuba. But in this case, where we're saying it's not actually part of her ksuba, the fact that we require the Yoshim to accept the money and give her the keli, loy, we wouldn't have known that from his first din. You would think, after all, they belong to them. Kamash Malan, and therefore, Rabbi Yehuda tells us that even in that case, she's entitled to say, I want that actual keli, and therefore I will pay you for it, and you have no choice but to take that money and give me that keli because of Shvach Beis Aviyah. And that's the halacha.
Did the Chachamim impose a knas on someone who does that to prevent that type of theft?
You're talking about, for example, the case of the Tachrichim. Not that I know of. Doesn't mean that on a case-by-case basis, Basin might not do something about it for the future. If nothing else, again, in this case, it's going to waste. There's no particular statutory knas or anything for that. And as far as the other cases, also hektish chometz v'shichru, no. I mean, again, on a case-by-case basis, Basin can do something about it, but as a statutory thing, no. Okay. The Mishnah says, continuing on the topic of, again, the subject of the perek is who of a Kohen's household is and isn't allowed to eat truma. So the Mishnah says, Bas Yisrael shenisas l'Kohen, a Bas Yisrael who, of course, is not allowed to eat truma until she actually marries the Kohen. So now she marries the Kohen, so far so good, she can eat truma. But umes v'hinicha mu'uberes, now he died and left her pregnant. If she wasn't pregnant at the time, and she already had children from him, then no problem. She would be able to continue eating. We're talking about where she's a kosher woman. We're talking about there was no problem with their marriage. She's not an almona or grusha or what have you. The problem is, because she's pregnant, then that creates a complication over here, namely, that it creates a complication in particular as far as her slaves. Because when we're talking about the nichset tzon barzel, what happens is, ultimately, the same way as during her husband's lifetime, those nichset tzon barzel belong to him, the same way after he dies, they belong to the Yoshim until she demands them back. Now, we just said in the previous Gemara that when she demands them back, then fine, she gets them back. But until then, they belong to the Yoshim. Now, that means one of those Yoshim, potentially, is the unborn baby that she's carrying. On the other hand, we're going to see in the Gemara two reasons why slaves that are owned by an unborn kohen are not able to eat truma yet. We'll see in the Gemara two reasons why. Therefore, lo yechlo avadeha b'truma. So therefore, her avadim, her nixit sen barzal avadim, are not able to eat truma mipnei chelke shel uber, because of the portion that belongs to the unborn baby. So in other words, if she hadn't been pregnant, then there wouldn't be any problem. She's still able to eat truma because she has already children. She has other children from her husband, who, because they're eating, then she's able to eat, as we talked about yesterday in the Gemara, and as we'll have in more detail later on in our Perek. But the Avodim would be able to eat for the same reason as well, because they belong to those children, and those children are able to eat Truma, and therefore so can they. But now you have this unborn child, and therefore that messes things up, and now the Avodim can't eat Truma until the baby is born. Because Rabbi Yossi says an unborn baby has the ability to passel somebody from eating truma, but not, he does not have the ability to cause somebody else to eat truma. So Rashi explains this concept of a uber poisel v'ene machel is not specifically as far as avodim. It means, for example, that we have the other way around. Now let's take the example the opposite way. If it was a bas koyan married to a Yisrael, so we know once she marries the Yisrael, she can't eat truma anymore. But so now, if her husband dies, now the din is, as we're going to learn in more detail in the parak, that once her husband dies, if he leaves her childless, then she's able to go back to eating truma in her father's house. But now, when she's pregnant, then that doesn't work. It passels her from eating truma, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. And on the other hand, Be'enim Machil, and in an example like the first case of our Mishnah, where she's a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen, the fact that she's pregnant with the Kohen's child is not reason enough for her or her Avodim to be able to eat Truma, unless so when there are other children, at least she can eat Truma, but when there are no other children, let's say, then that, you can't say, well, she's carrying the child of the Kohen, as soon as that child is born, she'll be able to eat Truma, therefore now she can also. No, that's what we mean, that uber poisel ve'enim, that's what we mean, ve'enim mach. Tosfos discusses that it does mean that, sure, but it can also mean poisel ve'enim machil. It means that, it can also mean poisel as far as the avodim, as we just said, and ene machil as far as, and ene machil as far as his mother. Anyway, the point is that, so therefore, divrei Rabbi Yossi. So all of that is what Rabbi Yossi says. Omru lo, the Chachamim say to Rabbi Yossi, if you're going to say like that, that because of the unborn baby, therefore the avodim can't eat, well, then if you're telling us that applies when it's a Bas Yisrael married to a Kohen, that what happens, we're saying as soon as her husband dies, she herself still has the ability to eat Truma, but you're telling us her Avodim don't, af Bas Kohen l'Kohen, umes v'hinichem u'beres, then the same thing should apply if she's a Bas Kohen married to a Kohen, and her husband dies and leaves her pregnant. By the same logic, because of the unborn baby's chelek in the avodim, they also shouldn't be able to eat truma. So what, after all, if you're saying that the point is that an unborn baby can only be poisel, he can never be machil, so why are you mentioning specifically when she's a Bas Yisrael, the same logic would apply if she's a Bas Koyim. So why indeed Rabbi Yossi makes that distinction, we'll see in the Gemara. So first of all, the question then is, the Gemara starts out, Iboyalu, Taima de Rabbi Yossi, Mishum de Kasava Uber Mem E Zara Zoru, is it that Rabbi Yossi holds that this unborn baby is not considered a Kohen until he's actually born? Until he's born, he's considered a Zor. So that would explain the case of our Mishnah. She's a Bas Yisrael, so therefore she herself is a Zara. Up till now, she was able to eat Truma only because her husband is a Kohen. So now we would say, in effect, that the fact that she's pregnant with the Kohen's child, fine, but nevertheless, she herself is a Zara. The child she's carrying is a Zara. And therefore, that unborn baby has part ownership of those avodim, and therefore that's why the eved can't eat. So in other words, it would be exactly the same case if, let's say, you had a koyan and a zor owned a owned an Evident partnership, we wouldn't say the Evident is able to eat, so it would be the same thing over here. Or Dilma, or maybe is Rabbi Yossi's reason, never mind the question of whether the child is a zar, you know, even if she herself is a bas koyin, yolud machel she'ini yolud eini machel. Maybe Rabbi Yossi holds only a baby that's already born has the ability to make that his avodim can eat truma, but if he hasn't been born yet, then no. So the Gemara says, l'may naftamina. Now, what's the practical difference between the two explanations? And the answer is, well, uber b'mei tehenis. Exactly that. Let's say she's a bas koyin, so then there's no issue of zorus, because whether you consider the baby to, whether you consider that the baby is already a koyin as soon as he, either way, the baby is definitely a koyin as soon as he's conceived, because, you can't say he's not b'mei zor, he's not b'mei zora, he's not in the womb of a zora. She herself is a bas koyin, after all. So then, if that was the reason, then in that case, there'd be no problem with the avodim eating truma. On the other hand, if you say that it's a matter of unborn versus born, then the fact is he's unborn, so therefore you'd still have the same, consideration. So Tosfos explains now again there is a difference between the basis for his mother eating truma versus the avodim eating truma. We mentioned this in the Gemara yesterday that you have two different bases on which, when we say that one, because one person eats truma, therefore another can, you have where it's related to kinyan kaspoy, for example over here avodim whom he owns, versus we talked about yesterday, and we're going to talk in more detail later in the perek about, for example, where because a child is able to eat truma, therefore his mother can. Where there, after all, the child doesn't even need to be a koyin. The child or the grandchild, whatever, could even be a mamzer, and his grandmother can eat truma on that basis. But the point is, as far as avodim, do we say that, as far as avodim, the question is it that they have to be born, or is that not the issue? So the Gemara says, so what's the deal? What is the reason behind what Rabbi Yossi says? So Amar Rabba, Hainu Taima de Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi's reason is the first one, because Sava Ober B'mei Zar Azar. The first reason, because he holds until the baby is born, he's considered a Zar, so therefore he has part ownership of these Avadim, and therefore they can't eat Truma. So in other words, according to Rabba, if she was a Bas Koyin, then there wouldn't be an issue. Rabbi Yosef Amar, on the other hand, Rabbi Yosef says, Yolud Machil, She'en Yolud Ein Machil. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef says the second reason, that only when he's born is he going to be able to have that, because of him, his Avodim, his Kinyan Kaspoy, can eat Truma, but until then not. So it doesn't matter whether she's a Bas Koyin or Bas Yisrael, the same rules would apply. So the Gemara says, Mesvi. So the Gemara says, I have a contradiction on Rabbi Yosef. A Braisa says, Braisa says, it starts out the same as our Mishnah, that Omru loy l'Rabbi Yossi, that the other Chachamim said to Rabbi Yossi, me'acha she'ad tolano abas Yisrael l'koyin, given that you've told us already that this applies to a bas Yisrael married to a koyin, bas koyin l'koyin mahu, so what would you say the din is by a bas koyin married to a koyin? And he answers them, the reason I didn't mention that, zu shamaiti v'zu loy shamaiti, because I heard from my Rabbeim that the case of a Bas Yisrael, that the Avodim would be also to eat Truma. I did not hear that the same would apply to a Bas Koyin. In fact, Rashi says it's not even a matter of you saying I didn't hear, as in, so therefore I don't know. Rashi says, L'isu el l'hatera. I didn't hear that it would be also. I actually heard that it would be mutter in that case to eat. Well then, let's consider. Well then, if we go according to the first reason, which Rabba is saying is the reason behind Rabbi Yossi's opinion, well, then that explains why Rabbi Yossi is saying that I heard that one case is Osir and one case is Mutter, because there's an obvious difference. When she's a Bas Yisrael, we can consider the child a Zor till he's born. When she's a Bas Koyin, we can't. Ela i'amet yolud machel she'en yolud einim machel. But if you say, now in that case, Tosfa says, so why would the Chachamim even be asking him the question? Because they themselves don't know what the reason behind his din is. They thought that the reason might be because of the reason of Yolud Machu. But if, in fact, that is his own reason, the reason that Rabbi Yosef is accepting as his reason, my zushamaiti v'zuloi shamaiti, then what do you mean? I heard about this case and I didn't hear about that case. It's exactly the same case, because in both cases, the child was unborn and the same din would apply to both. So what says Tasha? You're right. It would be a Tasha on Rabbi Yosef's understanding. Nevertheless, as usual, Kasha doesn't mean tsyufta, doesn't mean that we've slugged up Rabbi Yosef's explanation. Nevertheless, what Rabbi Yosef said can still be valid, and in fact, the Rambam accepted as halacha. The Rambam accepts that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef of our Mishnah, and second of all, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef's understanding of him. So therefore, even if she's a Bas Koyin, the fact that she's pregnant and those children and that unborn child has part ownership of these avodim prevents them from eating truma until the child is born. Okay, so the Gemara continues. Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Zu Divir Rabbi Yosef. Now, all of this is only according to Rabbi Yosef. Av HaChamim Avim, the Cham say no. Yesh Le Bonim, Oichon Mishum Bonim. The Cham say, never mind the unborn baby. If she has other children with her husband, the Kohen, then those Avadim are able, the Nichsei Tzayin Barzel, are able to continue eating Truma on the basis of the other children, because they say that the unborn baby has no ownership of them at all. So therefore, in other words, according to the Chachamim, we ignore the unborn baby. So the other children, the Avadim are their Kinyan Kasloi, therefore they can continue eating. And if the husband, the Kohen, didn't leave children, then they'll be able to eat because the Kohen has brothers who will inherit him. And if he doesn't have brothers either, then you have the whole family. After all, we know that every born Jew has Yoshim. Only a ger can possibly die without Yoshim. So a Kohen is going to have, if he doesn't have children, then he has brothers. If he doesn't have brothers, then he has uncles, he has great uncles, great grandfathers, second cousins three times removed, whatever it is, you're ultimately always going to have that he has Yoshim. And therefore, the Chachamim say that until the baby is born, then they are the ones who inherit his property. So therefore, they say that there's no issue of an unborn baby at all. Tosfos explains, actually, now, we could have just as well said that the Chachamim don't agree with the two things we just said. We just said Rabbi Yosi has two possible reasons for his shita. One because we don't say that the unborn baby is considered a zor, and one because we say that the only yolud machel, sheni yolud any machel, which later on we're going to learn that from a drasha. The Gemara could have said that the Chachamim disagreed with both those concepts, but instead the Gemara says that the Gemara knew that the Gemara had a Kabbalah that the Chachamim say it because of a different reason, because they say that the unborn baby is the unborn baby doesn't yaushin anyway. So the Gemara says, Zuvalai Svirlai. Now you're telling me Shmuel is saying that this is what Rabbi Yosi says, and the Chachamim say different, implying that Shmuel does not agree with Rabbi Yosi's din. Ha'omalai Shmuel of Chana Bagadta. Don't we find, though, that Shmuel said to Rabbi Chana Bagadta? Bagadta, Rashi says, can have two possibilities. One is that Bagadta is short for Baal Agada, that he was an expert in Agada, but he was a Talmud of Shmuel, so Shmuel is going to have him make an announcement of the halacha. The second possibility, it actually says, is Bagadta means he was from Baghdad. The famous city of Baghdad was founded only later in the times of the Goyim, but there was a village there beforehand that had the same name, and so this Rav Chana might have been from there. Anyway, so he tells him, Puk Aisili Beyasara, go out, bring me 10 Tamar Chachamim, because I want to make an announcement of a halacha and I want it to be well publicized. The De'emalach Ba'an Payu, I want to tell you the following din in their presence. Hamazaka La'uber Kona. If a person says about an unborn baby, I want to give him such and such, then that unborn baby is Kona. We don't say, in other words, that he's considered Dava Shalai Bala Olam. So we see that a baby does have the ability to acquire things. Therefore, he has the ability to yaushin as well. So that would mean that Shmuel holds like Rabbi Yosi. So why is Shmuel using the expression Zudivir Rabbi Yosi as though to say Rabbi Yosi says this, but I don't agree with it. I agree with the Chachamim. Ela no Zu Usvirle. No, what Shmuel is saying is this is what Rabbi Yosi says, and I agree with it. Well, then the question is, my Kamash Malon. And in that case, what does Shmuel want to tell us by that? He wants us to know, he wants us to know that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yosi. So like this, we thought that he's saying that in order to say as like a disclaimer, to say you should know Rabbi Yosi says this, but the halacha is actually like Chachamim. Now we're saying that no, he just wants you to know, you should be aware that this is not, that Rabbi Yosi is not the only opinion on the subject. Nevertheless, though, the halacha is in fact like him. By the way, Tosfos Yeshanim discusses over here, I mean, the fact is we do say that you can't be matna dagar shaloi bala olam, but here it's not. I mean, the object itself is bala olam. It's only the baby is not. So first Tosfos Yeshanim says that because the object is bala olam. Then Tosfos says that no, you don't even need that. The baby is already considered dagar shaloi bala olam because we're talking about over here where hukar ubra, where we already, the pregnancy is far enough along that we can see that she's visibly pregnant. That can already be considered dagar shaloi bala olam.
First,
that's Tosfos Yeshanim's first explanation is that we're talking about, the, for example, the Avodim already Bala Olam. The Avodim, and therefore, But now Tosfos Yeshanim is saying you don't even need that. Even if you say that you're focusing on the Makabel Matana, once the pregnancy is recognizable, then already the baby is considered Dover Shabbala Olam. Okay, so the Gemara says, Umi Pligi, are you telling me, in fact, that the Chachamim disagree with Rabbi Yosi? Masiv Rav Zakkai, but Rav Zakkai points out a contradiction, or Hagoy Sabach changes it, to Rav Omer Rav Zakkai. Didn't Rav Zakkai say, Zu Ages Heid Rav Yosi, Mipi Shmai Vav Talion, Rav Yosi said this testimony about this din, about the unborn baby and the Avodim, in the name of Shmai Vav Talion. Now, it wasn't directly, Rav Yosi lived a couple hundred years after Shmai Vav Talion, but he had a Kabbalah from his Rebbeim, that Shmai Vav Talion said this, Behoiduloi, and Rav Zakkai says, the Chachamim agreed with him. So that implies that they don't disagree. Rav Ashi, Mikotani Bekiblu. So Rav Ashi says no, because the expression, if it meant they actually conceded the point, then the expression would be the Kiblu. They accepted his testimony that this comes from Shmai Baptalion. All it is Vahoidu Loikotani. The expression is they admitted to him, meaning the Mistaber Taimi. They said, fine, you have a very logical basis for your explanation. We can accept that you have a logical basis. That doesn't mean that we accept that Malacha, we say that the baby relative to the other heirs, the other children or brothers or what have you, is not considered to be inheriting it yet. But the Hoidu just means that they accepted that he has a valid logical basis, and fine, even they say Shmai Vav Talion said it, but okay, Shmai Vav Talion is not necessarily the last word in Halacha, we can disagree with that. Okay, so Shmuel wants us to know, nevertheless, the Halacha is in fact like Rebbe's. The Gemara continues, Tonan Abanon, we learn in a Braisa, Hiniach Bonim, more on this topic, Hiniach Bonim, if the Kohen left over children and he passed away, then both groups are able to eat, meaning both the Nichsim Belug and the Nichsim Tzayin Barzel. So the Nichsim Belug, of course, we never had a problem with, because after all, she's able to eat Truma. The scenario in our Mishnah was that she had other children from her husband, the Kohen, and the only problem was Nichsei Tzoyin Barzel, because those belong to the Yoshim, and one of the Yoshim is the unborn baby, and we said for two possible reasons that might be a problem. But she herself was certainly able to continue eating Truma, because she has other children, and because they can eat, she can eat. So therefore, the Nichsei Malug are not a problem. The Nichsei Tzoyin Barzel can eat, because again, because they belong to the children. So therefore, Elo Ve'elo Oislam. So both groups of Avodim are able to eat. Hinichamu Uberes, on the other hand, if you left her pregnant without any children, Elo Ve'elo Oislam, then neither group can eat. Because the unborn baby, as we said, doesn't have the ability to have either his mother or the Avodim eat because of him. Hiniach Bonim, Hinichamu Uberes. Now what happens, which is the case of our Mishnah, if he left living children, but he also left her pregnant, then Avdim Malug Oichlim Kederach Sheyachelas, then the slaves who are Nichsim Malug will be able to eat the same way as she does, because after all, they belong to her. Avdim Tzayin Barzal Lo Yoichlim Pnei Chalke Shal Ober. On the other hand, the Nichsim Barzal ones will not be able to eat. because of this portion of them that belongs to the unborn baby, because as we just said, Rabbi Yossi holds that which means, by the way, now the Braisa is making it clear that that is the reason behind Rabbi Yossi's opinion, not the reason of because the unborn baby is considered a zar, and therefore, again, that supports what Rabbi Yossi had said before, which is why we said that even though it was a kasha on Rabbi Yossi, it wasn't kiyuvta, because we have right here another Braisa that supports what he says. So that's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi, Omer Mishum Aviv. Now, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi says in the name of his father differently, Habas ma'achelas haben enimachel. If, you know, the daughter can make it possible for the slaves to eat truma, but the son cannot. What does that mean? We'll see on Amud Beis what that means. Rabbi Shimon Yechoy, Omer, Zechorim Yoichlo Kulon. Rabbi Shimon Yechoy says, the males, all of them can eat, nekeves lo yoichlu, but the girls cannot eat. Now, Rashi says over here, we shouldn't be goris the word zchorim, because what do you mean? It's not a question of whether there are some boys, and it's not a question of whether there are some boys. As long as there's even one boy, then the abadim can eat because of him. Because after all, the unborn baby is either a boy, and then Rav Shimon Yochai would be saying like the Chachamim that we're not concerned about the unborn baby. After all, the unborn baby might be a girl. If there are boys, then she's not yarshining anything anyway. And so now Rashi, so like this, Rashi explains, which the Gemara itself is going to say soon. When the woman is pregnant, let's consider there's two possibilities. She's either carrying a boy or a girl. Now, if it's a boy, then we're saying, according to Rabbi Yossi, we're saying that baby has the ability to inherit, and therefore even now in the womb, he still has a certain ownership of the avodah. Now, if there's already at least one boy, which is the case we're talking about over here, then either he has a portion in the avodah, or it's a girl, and a girl's not going to yarish in anything. Now, though, in addition, you have among boys, there's a certain percentage that get miscarried. So once you do that, Rav Shimon is going to say that you have a majority of cases where the unborn child is not going to be yarshin in any way, and therefore he says you have nothing to worry about. So that's why he says...
Boys are not more likely than girls.
It's not that boys... First of all, there is actually, statistically, they actually find that boys are slightly more likely to be miscarried than girls, but that's not the point. We start with the assumption that the distribution is about 50-50. Then once we have that a certain number of babies are going to be miscarried, well then, some of them are boys, some of them are girls, but the point is, therefore you have, let's say it's a 100% chance that there's a baby over there, obviously, because she's pregnant, but out of that 100%, let's say 49 are going to be healthy girls, 49 are going to be healthy boys, and 2% are going to be miscarried, let's say. So whatever the percentages are, the point is that you have a majority once you add that you don't have 50% that are going to be viable boys. So therefore, so Rav Shimon is saying, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, that you can ignore that. So therefore, so Rav Shimon says, Chorim yoichlu kolon, nekeves lo yoichlu. If you have boys, if she has boys already, then the avodim are able to eat. The kavis lo yoichlu, but if she only has girls so far, then the avodim can't eat because then the unborn baby might be a male. So if you already have males, then fine, you don't have to worry so much about that. The unborn baby might also be a male, might be a healthy, viable male, and then he has a portion of those avodim. But if she only has girls, then you can't. So now Rashi says there was a girsa that had kulon schorim yechelu, kulon nekevis lo yechelu. Rashi says, what do you mean kulon nekevis? Doesn't matter, kulon schorim. Doesn't matter whether it's all boys or whether she had so far some boys or some girls. As long as there are some boys already that she has, then that's reason enough to ignore the unborn baby. However, Tosfos Yeshanim says that maybe kulon means both kinds of avod. Anyway, the point is, So he says that's the difference. Shemi Motze Uber Zafar, because after all, if she only had girls so far, the unborn baby might be a male, the Ema Bonus from Makama Ben Klum. And we know that when there are sons, the daughters don't inherit anything. So therefore, then it would come out that these Avadim belong to him. And he's not born yet. And he said, Uber Poisova Enimachel. So the Gemara says, "My ir yashemi yimotze uber zocher." Why even bother mentioning that point that it might be a male? Typically, in a kavi nami posla, knew, and if it was, and if we knew for a fact that it was a girl, well, all she has so far is girls. That girl is also going to inherit. So what? So if she had so far, she had a bunch of girls. We're there. If she never ends up having boys with her husband, the kite. Remember, her husband is dead at this point. So the baby she's carrying is the last chance. So if it comes out it's all girls, then fine. It's going to be like nice fluff club. They're all going to inherit together. And if it's a boy, then he's inheriting exclusively. So why even bother mentioning the point where he's a male? Regardless whether he's a male or a female, he has either a portion or the entire ownership of these avadim. And the answer is, you're right. Reb Shimon is actually implying that there are two different considerations. Number one, if it is a girl, then she would passel as well, because after all, now she's going to inherit together with her sisters and uber poisel the eni machil, like we said. Second of all, it might be a boy, and then he's inheriting the whole thing. And then the girls are not inheriting anything because the boy who's born after them inherits everything. So therefore, so in short, Rabbi Shimon is saying that if she has no boys from her husband, the Kohen, so far, or she has his girls, one way or the other, how you look at what's the story with the baby that she's carrying, either way, until that baby is born, the Abdet Son Barzal are not going to be able to eat. Now, what about though? Rav Shimon had said zchorim yoifu. So the question is, how? Why? Well, ikka uber. What do you mean? If she has boys, then the avodim are able to continue eating truma. What about that unborn baby? And the answer is, here is where we have what Rashi mentioned before. Kasava ein choshish miyuta. One possibility is Rav Shimon says we're not worried about the miyut, because again, like we said, when you consider the statistics, the number, the percentages of the number of the percentages of that the child is going to be a boy and that it's going to be healthy and viable is less than 50%. Because again, you have about half of children who are born are girls, and among the ones who are born, a certain percentage are stillbirths or otherwise non-viable. So therefore, once you add those together, you have over 50%, and therefore, so now that it should be a healthy boy is a miut. And Rav Shimon would say that we're not choshish about miut. Tosfos mentions, by the way, a point that comes
up. Like a little mirror.
It may be a large mirror. So one second. Tosfos mentions over here a point that there aren't, when we talk about roiv and miut, we have to distinguish between two different kinds of roiv and miut. We have, they're called in halacha, ruba de ise kamon and ruba de lese kamon. Ruba de ise kamon means when we actually have the roiv and the miut in front of us, and we have to determine this particular item does belong to the roiv or the miut. For example, we're going to have in a couple of months, that's the Shem, at the beginning of Chesubas, we're going to have cases where a woman had relations, we're not sure who the father, and had a baby, we're not sure who the father is. We're there, we have to consider the roiv of the people in the city and determine whether the father belongs to that roiv or whether he might be from the miyot of Sodom. Because there it's Ruba de Ise Kamon, there you have, the roiv exists in front of us. On the other hand, so then when you have Ruba de Ise Kamon, then everybody agrees we're not worried about the miyot. And we'll see it actually in that Gemara there when it comes to Yuchsin, we have higher standards, but still the point is that in general, when you have the Ruba de Ise Kamon, then we have less reason to be concerned about miut. Here what we're talking about, on the other hand, is the statistical miut. Yeah. We're talking Ruba de Lese Kamon, it's called. It's not that we have in front of us the babies who are born and we're gonna go start counting them up. It means statistically we can figure out that there are a certain number that are girls and a certain number that are boys and a certain number that are non-viable. So you call it the population statistics. So here, Reb Shimon would be the one who says that we're not worried about that kind of meat. So that's one possibility. The Another possibility is that maybe Rav Shimon does hold with choshish for the miut. But what do we do in order to avoid the situation where, because this baby might be a boy and might be a viable boy, therefore you're saying he has part ownership of these avadim, and therefore the avadim are not going to be able to eat truma till he's born. What do we do? Da'abdin le takanta kirab Nachman Omer Shmuel. What we do is we fix up the situation the way that Rav Nachman says in the name of Shmuel. Namely, the Omer of Nachman Omer Shmuel, Yisoyimim Shabol Lachlok B'nichse Abihem, when you have Yisoyimim, let's say, for example, so let's start with the case where all of them are born already. And then we can apply the same idea when one of them is unborn yet. So when you have a bunch of a person passed away, he left a bunch of little children, and they need to divide up their father's property. So now they themselves are not going to be able to know what they should take for themselves. Based in Ma'amidin Lahem Apotropos, Beistin sets up an apotropos, a trustee for them. Rashi explains it's an individual trustee for each one. So each apotropos is representing one particular child. Tosfos refers to over here something that they say in Gittin, where they say over there, and the Rambam also holds that no, it means you set up one apotropos that he manages the entire division. Anyway, and he's responsible to pick a nice portion for each one. So according to Rashi, you have a separate apotropos for each one. So that's his job is to make sure that his client, that the particular yosim that he represents, is going to get a nice portion. Now, so Shmuel continues, when the children get older, then they can protest. They can say, you know what? I wouldn't have agreed to take this portion. The apotropos did it, but I don't agree with what he did. So what is it? So what good does it do that the apotropos did it in the first place? Rashi explains as far as the payrus up until now. So let's say, let's take a simple example. There were two kids. The guy left, for example, a field and a vineyard, and the apotropos decided, let's say, one child gets the field with a grain and the other one gets the vineyard. Now, when they get older, so they're the one who got the vineyard says, you know what, I'm not happy with that. I would have preferred the grain field. So fine, they can undo the chalukah, but nevertheless, whatever grapes and whatever wine he got from the vineyard up until that point still belonged to him. We don't say he has to reimburse his brother for it. On the other hand, Rav Nachman on his own disagrees with Shmuel. He says, no, when they get older, they can't be because otherwise, what good is the strength of Beistin? Beistin said that this guy, that Beistin appointed this apotropos, so these apotropos in, and gave them broad powers, so how can now the Yisraelim come and undo it later?
We sometimes go like Rav Nachman.
Many times, in general, the halacha is like Rav Nachman and Dini Mamanis, and that's how it is over here. So now, applying that to our case, same idea. What do we do? Given that if this Ubo owns these Avodim, then that's going to create problems as far as them eating Truma. So Beistin sets up an apotropos and arranges that the other children will inherit the Avodim, and the unborn child will inherit an equal amount of other property corresponding to that. So therefore, he has no ownership of the Ubrim, says Rav Shimon, and therefore we're good. Therefore, the Avodim can continue eating Truma. This is according to Rav Nachman. So now the Gemara says, yeah, Rav Nachman Mayakovian. So the Gemara says, Lema de Rav Nachman Tanoihi. Well, does that mean then, since we're saying Rav Shimon is saying that, and the other Chachamim disagree with him, does that imply that the other Chachamim do not accept Rav Nachman's opinion on this subject? And the answer is, Loi, the Kulam Islahu de Rav Nachman. No, we can say they all do agree with Rav Nachman. What we can say is the question is, again, are we choshish for the miut? So if they made that takana, so in other words, we would say, the other Chachamim would say, if they made the takana, sure, we have no problem with the Avodim eating Truma. But if we didn't make that takana, then Rav Shimon is saying, still, the Avodim can eat Truma because we're not choshish for miyota. The Tanakama is choshish for miyota. Again, we were dealing over here with Ruba de Lasse Taman, a statistical roiv and miyot. Then the other Chachamim are saying, we do have to be concerned about that. But if they had done Rav Nachman's idea, then yeah, the other Chachamim would agree that would be fine. The Rashba, by the way, makes an interesting point over here. If we're saying that the apotropos is able to pick and say that the Uber is going to own only other nechosim and then the other children will only avodim, then that comes out that we're dealing with a case of Brera over here, because it comes out that we're saying that retroactive to when the father died, then retroactive to then we're saying that he owns or didn't own these avodim. Since when do we say yesh Brera with something Daraisa? So that Rashba says maybe in fact Rashi holds that yesh Brera even in things Daraisa. Fine. Now the Gemara continues. Let's continue with the Braisa from before. We said Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi Amim Shum Aviv. So we had again Rabbi Yossi saying that because of the unborn child, therefore the Avodim can't can't eat Truma. And again, we said, what we just said now is if they were to do Rav Nachman's idea of dividing up the Nechosim, then fine, even Rav Yossi wouldn't have a problem with that. But if they didn't, then he's Choshesh L'myota. But then we had Rav Yishmal, Rav Yossi, and Rav Shomav, Habas Machel Aben Enem Machel. He had said, a daughter can, Machel, Machelos really, it's supposed to be, the daughter can make that the Avodim can eat Truma, a son cannot. So we have to figure out. Maishna bendelai machil. So what are we saying? If the widow had sons already, then we're saying Deloy Machel was saying that the Avodim can't continue to eat Truma Mishum Chalkish over, because again the Uber now has a part ownership of these Avodim, because you know if she had, let's say, three sons already and now she's carrying a baby who might be the fourth, well the problem is that fourth now might own one quarter of those Avodim. Well, and if she only had daughters, wouldn't the same thing apply? Same idea. Then the son is going to be yashening 100% of the avodim. So why is Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi making a distinction between Ben and Bas? The answer is, because we're talking about over here where there's little nechosim. Namely like this. The Chachamim made a takana. It's discussed a lot in Bava Basra. Even though, of course, minatoid of sons inherit, daughters don't, but the Chachamim made a takana that the girls are entitled to mizoinus until they get married. So if he left unmarried girls, then they're entitled to mizoinus out of the estate. And the Chachamim made that even stronger than the Yerusha of the sons. So therefore, what happens is, so if you have nechosim merubim, if you have enough nechosim to be able to support the daughters till they get married, and there's still nechosim to give to the sons, then fine, that's what you do. If not, then the daughter's claim for them from the zonus takes precedence, and the sons, if need be, will have to go begging because they don't get a yerusha. So therefore, that's the case we're talking about over here, says Abaya.
If the nechassim will be completely used up
by giving mizonis to the daughters, then we say that the daughters get him and the sons yishavu al psachim. Yeah, I mean in the Mishnah over there in Bava Basra, you have Admon argues with that, but the halacha is not like Admon. The halacha is like the chachamim. Anyway, so therefore, so Abaya says, ika ben bahadi bas. So we're talking about that there is already a son and a daughter. So now, no matter how you look at it, then you have a difference whether what the baby is. If the unborn baby is a boy, well, he's not in any better position than the one who's already there. The one who's already there is not going to be inheriting the nechassim because they're only nechassim watim, and they're going to be going to his sister for her mizonos. So then the unborn baby is in the same boat. And if the unborn baby ends up being a daughter, well, why would she be able to eat truma? Is only the takana de rabbanan. Is only based on the takana of the chachamim, because min haTorah she wouldn't be yashining anything. Only her brother would. The de rabbanan were taking the money and giving it for mizonis for her and her older sister. Well, kamad le'nosif la'avra olam le'takana de rabbanan. Well, as long as the baby is not born yet, then the chachamim did not make that takana. So that's why when Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi says there's a difference between a boy and a girl, what he doesn't mean whether there's only boys or only girls. He means whether there's only girls so far, or whether there's at least one boy as well as girls. So in other words, if there was no son, then the unborn baby is going to get the nechassim as the rusha together with her older sister. So in other words, when Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi is saying habas imaben machelus, that if there's a daughter as well as a son, the avodim will be able to eat truma. But if there's a ben without a bas, then ain't a machil, then he can't because his unborn sister might end up getting all of these nechassim watim, and being unborn, she can't be machil the avodim. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay, so you're explaining then that Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi's case is referring to Nechosim Muatim, and therefore we're saying that the daughter has precedence over it, even though she's unborn. Well, Ema Sefer, but look at what Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi continues saying. He says, Shema Yimotzeh Uber Zacher. He says, the baby might end up being a boy, but Ema Bonis from Rakim Ben Klum, and daughters don't get anything when there are sons. Adirabba, so isn't it the other way around? Nechosim Muatim, the Bonis Nidu. On the contrary, what we just said is there's nechassim watim, then the daughters take precedence. So Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yossi's explanation of what he's saying doesn't fit with what we just said. But the answer is sefer asan, the nechassim merubin. The answer is you're right. he's telling us about two different cases. When there's nechasim mu'atim, then it depends whether there's already sons there or not. And when there's nechasim merubim, then we're saying there's a different consideration that the baby might be a boy, and that he joins in yarshining. So then we would say, like Rabbi Yossi had said, that either way, whether the already existing children are boys or girls, either way you have a problem, because if it's girls, then the unborn baby is yaushening everything, and as an uber, he can't make his slaves be able to eat truma. And if there are already boys, then he still has a portion. They disagree with Rav Shimon, who says we don't have to worry about that because Lois Hashinim Amirta. They are concerned about the Miyot. So Rabbi Yishmael, but Rabbi Yossi is telling us, in other words, there's two different cases. You have to consider the case of Nechasim Merubim and the case of Nechasim Muatim, and each one is going to have its different rules. In the case of Nechasim Muatim, we would say that there's a difference whether the already living children are boys or girls. And if it's Nechasim Merubim, then it doesn't really matter, because either way, whether the baby is a boy or not, and either way, Poisel Veinimachel. Okay. So the Gemara says, you're telling me that Nechasim Mu'atim belong exclusively to the daughters? If the Yisraelim go ahead and they sell from the Nechasim Mu'atim, Masha Machru Machru, what they sold is sold. So Tosfos explained that we're talking about over here where before Beis Din, now what's supposed to happen is Beis Din is right away supposed to take possession of the estate in order to give it to the daughters. So here we're talking about, the Tosfos first starts by saying that we're talking about that they grabbed it before Beis Din got a hold of them. Tosfos says that not necessarily. It could mean Kodmu means before the daughters started taking it for themselves. So even it's already in the possession of Beis Din, but the Yisraelim then got a hold of it. Masha Machu Machu. What they sold is sold. So it's still considered in their Rishus. So why shouldn't we say, so we're back to the question then. How can the Avodim eat if there were only daughters? Or if there are sons and daughters, we're saying that the Avodim can eat on the basis of the daughters are going to get the property. But what happens? The fact is the sons have a certain ownership of it. Which, by the way, the Gemara tells us in Sota, it was in the Daf of Sota for Sfira a few days ago, that this is an example of Rosh Ha'orim. If a person advises these Yisomim to do that, then it's an example of a Rosh Ha'orim, because he's taking away from the daughters. The Chachamim had made a takana that the daughters are supposed to get it, and he's going and evading that. So yeah. The crafty Roshim, if somebody gives advice to the Yisomim to do that, like he's not even benefiting from that himself, but he's telling the Yisomim how to evade. Yeah, Orum Meloshim Vanochashay Orum. Yeah. So the point is the Yisomim do have a certain ownership of the Avodim. So Ve'elamai Bastikatoni. So therefore, no, we have to understand differently. When Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi distinguishes between Ben and Bas, we're not talking about the children like we were assuming until now. Ve'elamai Bastikatoni A. What does he mean by Bas? He means the mother herself. So in other words, what he means is that the mother is going to be able to feed her avodim of nichsim malug, because after all, she up until now has been able to eat truma. She's still able to eat truma because she has children from the koyen, and by virtue of that, she's able to eat truma. So therefore, so her avodim, her nichsim malug, are able to also continue eating truma. So the Gemara says, "Yihachi hainu Rav Yosi." Well, then he's saying exactly. But on the other hand, we're saying that if it's not a matter of the mother being able to give them, if it's a matter of the son, then no, because once we deal with Yerusha already, then we have to consider the unborn baby's portion of the Yerusha. So the Gemara says, Yehochi Hainu Rabbi Yossi. Well, then it comes out, Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is saying the same thing as Rabbi Yossi. And the answer is, Kula Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi for some. You could say Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi is teaching the whole thing. He's telling us what Rabbi Yossi holds, and he's clarifying that, in fact, there would be a difference between he's telling us the whole thing is clarifying his father's opinion that there's a difference between, there's no difference whether the children are boys or girls, there's just a difference. Are the avodim eating by virtue of their mother, who in turn is eating by virtue of her children? That would be fine. On the other hand, once we deal with that they're eating because of the yershim, then you have a problem because of the unborn baby, because the unborn baby has a certain part ownership of those avodim. Again, they're choshesh lemiyota, so the baby might end up being a boy, and therefore they're eating machil. Okay, thanks, everyone.